Bah! Nuke blasted!
Jack sank sharp teeth into the guard's wrist. The guard battered the youth's head and shoulders with his free hand. Jack hung on, as tenacious as a weasel.
Let go, you rad-sucking son of a muty gutter slut!
Taking advantage of the distraction to lean on his shovel as he watched, JB shook his head.
You go, Jack.
Another guard came running up and swatted Jack in the head with the butt of his M16. Without so much as flinching, Jack back-kicked the guard in the balls.
You son of a bitch!
The man sat down hard on a red anthill, then rolled onto his side, moaning and clutching himself. Guards converged. Along with the blasters, they carried truncheons, some actual scavenged PR-25 side-handle batons. Others simply sawed out of table legs or baseball bats. They rained blows upon Jack's head and shoulders until he let go and fell to the ground, grinning at them with a mouth red with blood that wasn't his.
You like that, don't you, bitch?
Then they commenced to stomp him.
Oh, well, it was fun while it lasted.
The boy clearly had some hard lessons to learn about when to kick back and when to just bow your head and take what was coming. But JB couldn't just stand by and watch his longtime comrade-in-arms get kicked to death. He was going to have to do something, which likely meant his getting stomped as well. He was just shifting his grip on his shovel when a young sec man ran up and shouldered his M16. As serious as a multiple stomping was, it was nothing to being in the way of a sleet of nasty jacketed 5.56mm bullets, and the new arrival seemed blissfully unaware that no matter what angle he chose, there was no way to shoot the miscreant without ventilating three or four of his buddies as well.
That's enough! Stand down there, you men!
The guards fell back from the prostrate Jack. The boy with the M16 stiffened like a dog pointing the grouse. His finger tightened on the trigger.
Bledsoe! If you don't lower that piece right now, I'll ram it so far up your ass, you'll be looking at the front sight cross-eyed. Do I make myself clear, you polyp on a mutant salamander's asshole?
Yes, sir!
The newbie hastily lowered the rifle and snapped to. JB nodded in appreciation of the sick man's unexpected eloquence. An asshole Banner might be, but an asshole with style. The others fell back from Jack's well-trampled form. The youth had been lying in a fetal curl, with his face hugged into his knees, protecting himself as well as he could. He rolled to his belly, got to hands and knees, and shook his head. The guard whose wrist he had bloodied pulled out a Beretta and aimed it at Jack's head.
Mordock, what's wrong with you? Secure that weapon!
But Sarge, we gotta make an example of—
Now!
Damn it, Sarge!
Mordock holstered his blaster. It took him only three tries.
Better. Now, what we gotta do, skunk ape, is get the damned rail bed built up again so we can lay new rails before we all die of old age. We can't go shooting our whole labor force just because you're too fuckwitted to keep order. Unless you want to take his place swinging a pick, Corporal?
Sir, no, sir!
Pick him up!
A couple of the guards who had been thundering on Jack now dragged him to his feet by his biceps. One red eye was puffing shut, but aside from a thin trickle out of his left nostril, the blood on his face still wasn't his own.
Ah, the albino. You were with the bunch I helped scoop up yesterday. You listen to me, boy. We need you to do a job of work, but don't get the idea we can't fix the track without you. Act up again and I'll stomp your brains out your nose myself.
The sergeant glared around at the onlookers, guards and captives alike.
Don't you all have things to do?
Everyone turned away, suddenly eager to be doing those things. With dark looks, the guards let Jack go and backed away warily. He stood panting like a winded dog, still grinning defiance. JB scooped up a shovel full of earth and walked over to Jack, to look as if he intended doing something useful with it. Then he dumped the dirt and grounded the tool again.
That's no way to do it, Jack. That's way too hard a road to see to the end. Take an old man's word for it.
Huh. Kill Sergeant.
Yeah, if you live long enough. Keep up the way you've been, though, and you'll be staring at the sky when the stars come out.
Anger flared like a lazing ruby in Jack's eyes.
All right. Party time's over. Get back to work.
Jack turned away. JB moved on to join other laborers shoveling dirt into barrows. Sometime later, Mildred approached. Across her shoulder, she carried a pole with a water bucket at either end. She knelt and set down the buckets, then stood back as the thirsty laborers crowded around to ladle up water. She looked angry. JB reckoned he knew why.
None of us like it, Millie. But the one thing it ain't is personal.
Yeah, I know, John. Slavery's always been equal opportunity. But that wasn't how I was raised.
She looked around. There was still water, and the workers were still jostling one another to drink.
The bastards almost killed Jack. I wish I could look at him.
Boy's tough. Knows how to handle himself, too. I don't reckon they hurt him much.
We've got to get away from this madness.
Right. Looks like they'll finish their repairs here in 2-3 more days. What do you think they'll do with all us civilian laborers then?
We can't leave Doc.
That's the angle I haven't figured yet. Give me time, unless you got any ideas.
I might be able to figure something out.
I'm sure you will, Dr. Wyeth. But as far as I can figure, we need to spring the dock, blow out of here, and double back to find Christy.
I can't imagine how she must be feeling.
Hey, you! Get back to work, you lazy bastards!
Mordock was striding toward the knot gathered around the water buckets, a fresh white bandage on his wrist and blood in his eye.
What?
He suddenly dropped to his knees. A wondering expression came over his face. He opened his mouth and burped blood.
Oh, fuck.
It ran down his chin in a torrent. He fell onto his face as a gunshot echoed off the railway embankment. The desert bloomed with howling cold hearts. It wasn't a good plan. Chato might not know anything about strategy and tactics, but he was glumly convinced his plan sucked anyway. The idea was not to try creepy crawling the giant rail wagon in the dark. It was bristling with weapons, machine guns and turrets, Gren launchers, rockets, who knew what. And it had sensors, sirens, and searchlights. Chato may have been clueless when it came to strategy and tactics, but he did know the basics of breaking and entering. He and all his cold hearts had zilch for a chance of sneaking in undetected and making off with any worthwhile loot. What he had sold the others on, if not himself, was this. It was by night that the soldiers expected to be attacked. At night, they hunkered down inside their giant armored rail wag and just waited for somebody to be stupid enough to try them. Even the captives in their compound were protected by the monster's sensor envelope and its truly stupendous firepower. Chata's bandits could fire up the tents and the soft-skinned wags, but that wouldn't bring them Jack. The Coldhearts were intent on stealing shit. Torture, murder, rape were merely sugar. Plunder paid. The Lost Traveler's caravan had represented a pretty piddly haul. The armored train, however, held treasure beyond the Coldhearts' wildest dreams. So they would attack by daylight, when the greatest number of Sekhmen would be outside their protective metal shell, spread out and vulnerable. The heavy weapons mounted on the train would be reluctant to fire and risk killing their own, or even the slaves they needed to fix their steel highway. And maybe the slaves would take the attackers for liberators and rise up against their captors, or at least bolt in panic, and one way or another cause a hell of a mess. The raiders could then get in at the train, overpower the defenders, and give themselves over to the customary orgy of rape, slaughter, and of course, pillaging. Chato's followers had bought it anyway, especially when it was presented with all the power of his magic gift for talking people into things, which was what got him into this mess in the first place. But he had no choice now. It was go forward or die. They'd catch him if he ran. One of Ironhead Johnson's mountain men fired the opening round, the one that killed Mordock, from a scoped, heavy-barreled Remington 700. He lay on his belly on a low hog's back 500 yards south of the train and used his possibles bag for a rest. Johnson's men were probably the most formidable fighters, man for man, of all the Coldheart Army. Johnson himself had disposed of the three-man observation post dug in on the rise, using his trademark foot-and-a-half-long double-edged Arkansas toothpick.
Not bad, Ironhead. Not bad at all.
At this point, the track ran east and west, straight as a laser beam. A road, its pavement still largely intact, but serving now mainly as a super durable bed for layers of drifted sun-baked mud, ran along the south side of the embankment. The compound where the slave laborers were sheltered under canvas was south of the road and the giant gleaming fusion-powered engine, to allow trucks to trundle back and forth carrying supplies from freight cars well back in the train. From the east appeared a small fleet of dune buggies and wags, filled with young men waving long blasters. These were the Wild Boys, a local crew of Coldhearts, commanded by Wild West Wilhelm. an arroyo cut from 6 to 10 feet deep, with steep walls that had fallen in places because of rare but intensely savage downpours, ran at a diagonal south of the road, passing about 200 yards from the slave stockade. From it now erupted most of the rest of Chato's misfit army, El Gancho's pistoleros from northern Mex mounted on horseback, Hogan's contingent of 15 outlaw bikers on low-slung, snarling sleds. The heavy motorcycles had been wheeled by hand along the soft sand of the arroyo bottom to a place where a cave-in provided a natural ramp. Small in numbers, his band was unsurpassed in cruelty. Most of Red Wolf's band of Plains Indian cutthroats had ridden off in a huff after their leader's demise. However, staunch individualists that they were, seven or eight had remained and now joined the charge on their painted ponies. And finally, 20 or so random chillers who had drifted into the army at large, but not yet into any kind of affinity group. These loose ends had been sent off with the main body under the command of Bug-Eye Muller, who was suspected by many of being a mutie because of his unfortunately protuberant eyeballs, but who was so mean nobody ever so much as mentioned it. The throat and purse litters of El Abogado formed no part of the attack. They had their own assignment. And finally, Chato himself sat nervously on his paint pony atop a hill well to the south, leading from the rear where he could keep a good eye on the proceedings, as was appropriate to a cold-heart warlord of his stature. Or so he told his faithful followers. No, it wasn't a good plan, but it was shitloads better than admitting he'd drawn a blank and having his cold-heart followers decide to see what his insides looked like, preparatory to picking out a new leader.